So we're going to get going and we're going to get it over with. That's how it's going to go. So I don't know what that means, but just a reminder, we have public comment this afternoon, at some point early afternoon. If you'd like to make public comment on something that is not on the agenda, please make sure that you let Janice or somebody on the staff know that you'd like to make a comment. That would be great. And also as a reminder, tonight there is a flyer about the navigation simulator open house. If you have any questions, you can get a hold of Chris Sarrow. I think he's here somewhere, but that's going to start at 4:30, so none of you are going to make the 4:30 opening, I don't think. But anyway, with that, we have Dr. DeRobert is going to get us started this morning with a monkfish management track assessment. So doctor, if you're with us, whenever you're ready.
I think I'm with you. Can you confirm?
You're with us.
All right. We can jump right into the next slide. So term of reference one was estimate catch. We made some relatively minor changes to the way discards were estimated. We made a switch from a D1, and I apologize for the lingo, switch from a D1 to a D2 ratio estimator. It's just a minor technical tweak. The D2 is what's typically used in the region. So we just brought monkfish up to date. That had a negligible, almost immeasurable difference on the discard time series estimates. My predecessor in monkfish was manually deleting some of the more extreme discard observations, but the logic as to why wasn't clear to me. I also don't like to do that because it's a bit subjective and difficult to reproduce in future assessments. So I eliminated I eliminated that practice and added those discard observations back in. And so the differences you're seeing in this graphic for the discard time series, north on the left, south on the right, are driven by including the more extreme discard observations. So the D1 is what was being done. The D2 is switching to that ratio estimator again, which didn't matter, and adding the more extreme discard observations back in, which you can see has some effect in very few years, but a minor effect more recently. Next. I also found there was inconsistency in the stock areas used to define the north and south between what was being used for landings and discards. So I made that correction. So the dashed line is the old incorrect stock area definitions, and the solid black line is the corrected stock area definition. So now landings and discards are using the same area definitions and are now consistent with what will be used for cams moving forward. Relatively negligible effect in most years. Next. We reconsidered the assumed discard mortality rate in the scallop dredge based on a publication by Wiseman et al. And so the Wiseman paper said that the 100% discard mortality rate is likely incorrect, and the upper end of their sort of range of possibilities that they provided was 64%, and for a variety of reasons, and with consultation with the PDT and others, we used 64% assumed discard mortality rate from the scallop dredge. And so this is the discard time series from the scallop dredge fleet only, and there you can see the effect of switching from 100% the solid line to 64% mortality. Next. Here is the same graphics, except rather than just the discards from the scallop dredge, this is the total discard time series. And so you can see the effect diminishes a bit when you're looking at total discards. Next. Here are the updated landings time series. And obviously landings are not affected by the discard mortality assumptions. Next. And then here's total catch again with the 100% scallop dredge discard mortality assumption and the 64% and the 64% is what was used moving forward. Next. Term of reference two was evaluate the various indices available. So the top row is the northern stock area, the bottom row is the southern stock area, and then you can see where it says north-south in the ribbon. Just under each of the north-south labels is a label for what survey you're looking at. And in each case, we're looking at the 43 and larger centimeter 43 and larger centimeter fish, which is considered exploitable biomass. And that's what was used in previous assessments. You can let that stew a moment. I don't like to talk about the patterns I see. I think it's best if those in the room interpret them as they see fit. So I think you can probably move on whenever you're comfortable. Here are length frequencies for each of the indices. So this is the ASMFC survey for the northern stock area. The vertical blue dashed line in each panel is the, I believe, median length in that year for this survey. Next. Same type of graphic. This is for the fall nymphs bottom trawl survey in the northern stock area. Next. Spring nymphs bottom trawl survey in the northern area. Next. The scallop survey in the southern area. Next. The nymphs fall bottom trawl survey in the southern area. Next. Spring nymphs bottom trawl survey in the southern area. And next. Here are recruitment indices for the northern area on the left and the southern area on the right. For the north on the left, that is using the nymphs fall bottom trawl survey. There are some length cutoffs. So this is some length of fish and smaller. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what the cutoffs were, but they're defined in the assessment report, and they match what has been used in previous assessments. And then on the right, for the southern indices, you have the nymphs fall bottom trawl survey recruitment index, as well as the scallop survey recruitment index. Next. So there's a paired tow experiment using a chain sweep and I believe a rock hopper sweep that Tim Miller and others put together, and so this is the only estimates of absolute biomass that we have that are premised on that paired tow study. So it's in the term of reference to provide this information, although I note that it's never been used for much in monkfish, and that study in particular hasn't been really peer reviewed in the for use in monkfish assessment. But here they are, just the same. Next. Term of reference three, I like to abbreviate as do a stock assessment. As you're likely all aware, there's no reliable aging method for monkfish, and so catch advice is provided using a plan B. In this case, what is now termed the iSmooth approach, previously called the plan B smooth. Due to COVID, there's no 2020 survey observations. I considered two different options there, leave the 2020 observations missing, which the iSmooth approach can do, or impute with the mean of surrounding years. So take the average of the 2019 and 2021 observations and use that as sort of a filler for the 2021 data point. I typically don't like doing that imputation, but there's a variety of supporting analyses in the assessment report that demonstrated that imputing was actually superior to using a missing data point or using only one survey, for example, just the fall or just the spring. And so in this case, I bucked my personal preference and imputed a value for the 2020 observation. Next. And so a bit more on that. Imputing produced multipliers that better matched using all of the data. So the supporting analyses basically approximated cases where data were missing. And so I have a catch multiplier that's premised on a full time series, and then I would drop a data point and recalculate the catch multiplier to see how well it matched. And long story short, imputing was better than missing. And as I said, I repeated the analysis using only the fall or spring, but using a combined averaged fall and spring was far more stable and precise. So moving forward, we're imputing values for the 2020 missing and using an average of the fall and spring surveys, which is fairly standard in the region. Next. Here are the results of that iSmooth application for the northern stock area. You can see the multiplier in the upper left. So in the simplest of terms, this is what I would call a trend-based or empirical approach, where you develop a multiplier that would be applied to recent catch, or as I'm sure we'll discuss, some other value based on recent trends. And in this case, the recent trend is we don't just use the raw data points, which are the black dots. We put a smooth through that so we don't overreact to observation uncertainties or process uncertainties. So the smooth hopefully dampens out our reactions a bit. And there's the resultant multiplier premised on the most recent 3 years of that smooth. Next. Same plot, this time for the southern monkfish area. And the multiplier value is in that upper left again. Next. Terminal reference 4 and 5 were update the reference points and conduct short-term projections. Neither of those are applicable, and we don't have reference points here, so stock status is unknown. Next. Term of reference 6 was review previous research recommendations and SSC concerns. Here's just a few of them. A benchmark could consider using observer data and port samples to supplement length frequencies. We made no progress during this management track, but still duly noted. There's been a recommendation to continue research on age and growth. We haven't made any progress on that. I will note we've kind of run out of hard parts for monkfish to even attempt aging. So short of sort of cohort tracking length modes to get some approximation of a growth curve, I've been putting forth the question, can we just give up on aging and start to explore some other solutions? It was recommended to do research on a better understanding of stock structure and movement. We made no progress in this management track. And for the life of me, I can't remember why this is here, but somebody recommended consider the role of cannibalism in future modeling, and that we didn't consider that in this management track either. Next. During the most recent peer review, just sort of a quick summary, as I mentioned, they did suggest continued analysis related to growth, where you can maybe track modes of length and track cohorts through time and sort of backdoor a growth, length at age, growth relationship. There was the suggestion to consider a two-stage delayed difference style stock assessment. So this would basically have immature fish and mature fish. So it simplifies what we commonly see with a fully age-structured model, basically down to two ages, mature and immature. And that might show some promise for monkfish, and it would provide reference points and other beneficial aspects as well. The iSmooth approach was accepted as the basis for providing catch advice. The peer reviewers did not have a consensus on whether the multipliers were most appropriate for realized catches or whether they should be applied to the existing ABC or something else entirely. Next. That's all I had.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. So I'm going to go to the council to see if any questions for Dr. Durova. I'll start with Mr. Pappalardo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, John. I want to go back to your last slide, I think your last bullet of your last slide. If maybe you could just help describe the lack of consensus on the use of the multiplier, and then I have a follow-up after that. Thank you.
I can try. So if you believe that catch is the driving force in the population abundance and survey trends, then it seems that realized catches would be the most appropriate thing to use with the catch multipliers. But there were some other concerns about management constraints on catch, and I believe what's somebody called a sort of ratcheting effect, where you ratchet down catches, and so when you take sort of a most recent three-year average, the average comes down the next time you do the assessment, and it comes down again and again, which I note would only happen if the survey trends continue to decline, but that ratcheting effect was a concern that was expressed. I think that's the simplest summary, but there are others in the room that probably have a clearer view of those concerns and could chime in as well.
Mr. Pappalardo?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, beyond management restraining or constraining catch, you know, especially in the recent years in the South, and I guess in the North too, due to COVID, market considerations were a big driver in restraining catch. And that's sort of outside of management, the management prescription. And I just keep scratching my head about this multiplier. If we don't know how to apply it, why do we apply it anywhere? And why go in this direction? I'm just having trouble understanding how we arrived at the place we've arrived at. I can certainly see the trends in the survey, the dredge survey, and catch. I really understand why it's dropping, especially in the South, or why it has dropped. Again, I think it's a combination of market and restraining the fishery with management measures. But the idea that we can't age these things, and that the surveys that we do seem to pick to track the abundance of the resource, have never really been strong indicators or catchers, if you will, of monkfish. And so I'm having a really hard time, especially when I look at the results on the South. And I know you're talking about the assessment and the SSC portion is coming up, but how we're treating discards and assuming what discards will be when it comes to the South. So I just don't understand the multiplier and why we can't decide how to utilize it. Thanks.
Dr. Durova and Dr. Hare, I think, is going to help you out as well. So.
I'll defer to Dr. Hare first to see if he can scoop my answer.
Dr. Hare.
I'm sure my answer will be different, but we are using the accepted assessment approach in a management track. So, you know, the questions which you're raising, Mr. Pappalardo, are relevant, but they are sort of outside of the accepted assessment which Dr. Durova performed and which passed peer review. So, Dr. Durova, you want to provide more detail?
I'll provide a slightly different answer. I agree with Mr. Pappalardo. In this particular monkfish case, it's very odd to understand how we got to where we are with previous uses of this multiplier, not using realized catches or using ABC. And the logic behind those decisions is not clear to me. I think whether or not it's clear to you that the multiplier should be applied to realized catches or the existing ABC depends on your belief as to how much the catches are the main driver of the trends in the indices. I agree with the fact that there's understanding how we got here is a bizarre thing to retrace.
Mr. Pappalardo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the follow-up, and thank you, John, and John. Thanks.
Okay, I have Ms. Ware, then Mr. Smith. Ms. Ware.
Thank you. I had two questions. My first question was if there's a confidence interval on the multipliers and what that is.
That's a good question, and I don't have that information at my fingertips. So I can work on an answer, but it's not something I'm going to be able to just provide.
Okay, if it's possible to get it prior to monkfish tomorrow, that would be super helpful. And then my second question is, I guess I'm looking at the different outputs, I'll say, of the trawl survey, and I'm seeing different stories being told, and I guess that's adding maybe to my confusion. So I understand the multiplier figure, and I see the downward trend there, but I also think the recruitment is coming from the trawl survey, and I'm focused on the northern management area. That recruitment trend looked positive. And then I also looked at the length distribution figures, and those seem to have like pretty, what I would call broad length categories, you know, and it was high counts. I didn't see like a certain length dropping off that might indicate a downward trajectory in the stock. Am I thinking about this right? Or I mean, are we getting kind of different stories from the different data out of the trawl survey, or am I confounding this?
No, I think your interpretation of the graphs is relatively accurate. I think when you look at the recruitment indices, it will take those fish a few years to grow to the exploitable biomass size. So assuming those fish don't have some anomalous mortality event or leave the area, I would expect the indices in the bottom trawl survey of exploitable biomass to turn around, at least in the north. So I agree with your interpretation. And of course, will the bottom trawl survey trend turn around in a few years? Based on this, your expectation is yes, but as I think we all appreciate, there's never a guarantee.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Neese?
Yeah, just to that point, I'm not sure if John wants to verify this or not, but I think one of the issues here is we're not always sure that the index of recruitment winds up showing up in the biomass. We have an example of that with a 2015 year class of monkfish in the southern fishery management area, which never seemed to transition into adults, perhaps due to discarding, but we don't actually know that for sure.
Ms. Ware? Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dr. DeBora. I'm going to keep on the recruitment theme here. I wonder if you can go to slide 15, I believe it was. It does have the recruitment indices, the term of reference to the recruitment indices. There's graphs side by side with the southern and the northern area. Slide 15 on mine. I was looking at the plotted graph of them. I'll ask my question. There it is. Yep. So just looking at these two graphs, it does look like since 2008 or so, the the trend on recruitment in the northern area is pretty positive, and in the southern area it's pretty flat. It looks like the values in those two graphs are pretty similar to one another, but I'm just curious if anything came up in the assessment that would give insight as to why recruitment seems to be doing better in the northern area than the southern, if I'm interpreting the graphs correctly, that is.
The only thing I'll note there is that the vertical axis scale is different on the left than the right. Looking at just the trends, we never got around to a discussion as to why the northern recruitment trend, and I agree with your interpretation of it, seems to be generally positive for 10 years or so, and while in the south it seems to be flat. I think we could probably throw out multiple hypotheses that we probably couldn't support or do sufficient research on in the context of a management track. So we didn't get that far, but I agree with your interpretation, and pulling at that thread would be interesting.
All right. Thank you for that. And I guess at the end of the day, as Tom just said, you know, it's whether they show up in the exploitable biomass that really matters. But thank you for that information.
Mr. Tracy.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Dr. Drova. I'm going to scope out a little bit. Hopefully you come with me on that. For those of us that don't spend a lot of time on assessments or have a lot of background in them, I'm trying to put this in context, and I hope you can help me. Obviously, we have no analytical assessment here, so we're on the plan B and using the iSmooth approach. And we're applying multipliers. We have missing values. And what my question is, how far down the rabbit hole are we here? Is this pretty atypical to get this far into unknown and needing to apply variables to come up with a number?
In terms of using sort of a trend-based approach to rescaling catch, we are not that far down a rabbit hole. These types of trend-based, index survey-based approaches are used pretty commonly the world over, especially in the absence of an age-based assessment. So in that sense, we are not that far down the rabbit hole. And the iSmooth approach, even though it has fancy statistical terminology around it, low S smooth, blah, 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 it's really just taking, it's a fancy way to just look at recent trends and respond, assuming those recent trends are driven by catch. So on the face of it, it's actually a relatively simple approach that's fairly common, both nationally and internationally.
Okay, appreciate that. So the only question is the variables and the inputs we're using on multipliers.
Yeah, you could certainly ask additional questions as to what surveys should be included or not, and you can tweak the iSmooth. There's a few knobs you can turn on the iSmooth approach, most of which won't really matter. So you're getting in. Well, you could get into the weeds there, but yes, I agree with the general sentiment.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else from the council before I go to the public? Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, John. Thank you for your presentation. Just wondering if the iSmooth model focuses specifically on monkfish or if it's a model that's from another fishery such as groundfish where we're just trying to, fit monkfish into the model itself versus having a model designed around monkfish in and of itself. So thank you.
Yeah, so similar to the previous comment I made, the generic approach of using survey or index trends to rescale catches and provide catch advice is pretty common the world over and has been applied to a broad suite of species and life history types. In this region, the iSmooth approach was certainly born out of groundfish, and I'm sure some of you have seen the Legault et al. Paper and the index-based methods working group that was sort of groundfish centric. And so most of our iSmooth work has certainly been groundfish centric, that doesn't make it inappropriate for monkfish. I've been thinking about this a little bit, and some folks on the side have been asking me, you know, what makes the ice smooth approach appropriate for monkfish? And I kind of answer it by flipping it on its head and saying, yeah, monkfish is not groundfish, but it's not so dissimilar from groundfish. And there's nothing obvious that makes the ice smooth approach inappropriate for monkfish. And those are the types of discussions that we had at the peer review in the SSC. So I don't think we're not transferring a groundfish-centric method to la-la land. It's not that big of a jump, and these trend-based approaches are common for a wide variety of life history types.
Mr. Hughes?
Thanks, John. I have another question, and you know, getting away from the age-based models, because it's the monkfish have not been, we've been unable to determine aging in monkfish. I see one of the recommendations is like cohort tracking and, you know, age over time. And I'm wondering is that, I believe that there have been a number of tagging studies that have been done. Is there enough data out there to incorporate that into your into your recommendations here, or is that data unavailable to us at this time? Thank you.
That's a great question, and I don't have an answer. This is my first go-around with monkfish, and I've been doing multiple other assessments this year, and so I do know some tagging data exists, but in the context of this management track, I haven't cataloged it and figured out what's available and what we might do with it. But it's a great suggestion and worth follow-up.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I have Dr. Hare before I go to Mr. Hansen.
Yeah, thank you very much. And your question, Mr. Hughes, fits very well, you know, as a research track for monkfish. I don't have the date in front of me. I think it's 25 or 26. I'm looking down the table. 27. And so that type of question could be taken up at the research track. Similarly, you know, the further developing the delay difference model could be taken up in that research track.
Thank you. Mr. Hansen, and then Ms. Etree.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, John, for your presentation. Now a question on the dredge discard mortality that's been applied recently. Now, the multipliers are based on catch. The discard mortality reduces the catch with this new application of only 63 or 64%. How does this affect, I mean, this would lower the multiplier. Is this, and this is a new thing that's just happened for the last 3 or 4 years that really see that, you know, if you're talking about recent trends, it's very marked. The last few years have also, the targeted catch has gone down because of market trends and fuel prices and COVID and a lot of other things. So can you explain to me the logic on why a conservation measure, or where the survivability of discards is actually impacting catch advice negatively when we're actually saving more fish?
I can try. Let's just pretend for a moment we have no idea what catch is, and all we have available to us is survey trend. We can look at that survey trend as we do in the ice smooth approach and say that survey trend has gone down for the last 3 to 5 years, and logically conclude that whatever the catches are, they are driving that decline. And so to this point, we have no idea what catches are. The data we have at hand is just that the population trend is decreasing. In this case, we do have some concept of what the catches are. And even though logically you want to say, well, you decreased the scallop dredge mortality assumption, which means there should be more monkfish out there. If you flip that coin around, it actually says, the survey trend still hasn't changed. It's still a decline. So yes, we decreased the scallop dredge mortality to 64%, which means we induced less mortality on the stock, not more. The problem is the survey trend upon which the ice move is based is still showing a decline. So whatever the catches are, whether they be premised on 100% mortality or 64% mortality rate, whatever the catches are, they induced a negative trend in the indices of abundance. And the indices of abundance are what produces the multiplier, which then gets applied to however you calculate catch. So I can see the sort of almost logical circularity problem of it. But again, whatever the catches are, the belief would be that that is what induced the negative trend in the survey. So we can assume dredge mortality is 0%. But as you noted, the multipliers wouldn't change at all because the survey trends are what they are. And the multiplier would then be applied to even less. The catch estimate would be even lower. But there is a logical circularity there that you need to wrap your head around.
Mr. Hansen?
As a follow-up, as far as survey trends go, how much confidence do you have in the recent surveys with the truncated surveys that have been occurring because of COVID? And as a second part of that question, there's also a dredge survey by VIMS, which is long-term, especially in the South, that doesn't appear to have been consulted at all. Could you explain that?
The 2020 survey was certainly the most impacted by COVID. The surrounding years, less so. And the iSmooth approach can deal with that. In this case, we just sort of imputed a 2020 value. And again, I had some supporting analyses around that. So in terms of how much confidence do we have in the recent survey observations, barring the fact that 2020 was entirely missing, 2021 and spring 2022 are as trustworthy as any other fully sampled year. The VIMS, I carried forward in this management track any survey that I saw presented in the previous assessment. And so if I missed a VIMS survey, it's simply due to my own ignorance and not turning over every rock in the context of the management track. But that's something that could be addressed, just not right now.
Thank you very much. I have nothing further.
Ms. Eitri.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation, Dr. Daruba. One of the questions I have kind of builds off of the statements you made a few times about the efficacy of the multipliers are really predicated on whether or not you think catch is the main driver, what you're seeing in the surveys. We've heard, and this is a question really probably more so specific to the Southern Fishery Management Area, we've heard a lot from members of industry that they've had a shift in fishing behavior, both because of market drivers, mainly because of market drivers where they're fishing later into the year, which arguably, especially considering the timing of the survey, might create a mismatch of what we are expecting to see between multipliers and the surveys. So I'm just wondering, when you were doing this work and evaluating the multipliers and evaluating catch, if you did any type of analysis analyzing whether or not a shift in temporal commercial catch information may be inadvertently creating a picture within the multipliers that's actually not aligned with what we're seeing in the survey trends, which would make the multipliers inappropriate to use?
We did not do any explicit research on that topic, but the concern is valid. I think, and not just for monkfish, I think for a lot of species in the region, as we see changes in the timing of migration or north-south migrations, whatever the case may be, if more of the stock is no longer within the survey area, that will be problematic. I think your concern was largely based on the fall survey. And so I would only note that the spring survey and the fall survey both show declines, but your overarching point is well taken and something that is worthy of additional consideration. Accounting for these types of shifts is something we need to be aware of, and not an easy thing to address, but something that does need our time and attention. But we did not do anything specific in this particular case.
Ms. Etri.
I'm all set. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Okay, anybody else from the council before I go to the public? Okay, anyone from the public have a question for Dr. DeRoba? Mr. Dodge and then Mr. Hasbrook. If you could come to the mic, sir, I would appreciate it. And if you could introduce yourself and your any affiliation you may have, would be great.
Sure. My questions, I was listening.
Hang on, Mr. Dodge, your name and your affiliation will be great.
Josiah Dodge, owner of Fishing Vessel Edward and Joseph, multi-generational fishing family from Rhode Island and Chatham. My question is all the science. There seems a lot of dead ends. We're using the worst possible catch system on the trawl survey. I know Mr. Papalardo and the fixed gear sector have done a ton of work in the past to help with stuff like this. But my question is, how do you take the worst possible catch method and apply that and make an impact? My next question would be is, if it's in such decline, and we're in such trouble in the monk fishery, why do we need to use research days to haul our gear? You can't go out this, you know, once the monk fish are there and get through your sets of gear on what the government currently gives us. My next question on the iSmooth approach is, if you have a declining multiplier and you cut our catch down by that, how do we ever go back up? I'm sorry, I have little faith in anything that would show otherwise after the ground fish debacle with the same approach. There's a lot of questions here on the table for us in the industry that's not just coming from me. I understand 2020 was a horrible year with COVID. Fuel prices, I completely understand. I mean, in 2 years, I've gone from paying less than $2 to paying over $5 a gallon for diesel fuel. The price being down because we can't ship, I understand. On our catch history, and what you're looking at on catch, did we ever take into the account the facts of, I don't know, people like my father, owned the Lady Irene, the Edward and Joseph, and the Stranglehold, three boats, all actively fishing in this fixed gear sector, always landing. Now they're not. There's only one that's been fishing in the last 2 years, and that's Matt on the Stranglehold since he bought it. There's a lot of questions here that I have. My question is this, as being a first-year federal fisherman, and coming into this and being predominantly looked at, like part of my area that I fish, which is southern New England, is gonna be cut by 85% or a huge chunk, and that's never gonna come back up. I don't see how iSmooth works, and I understand how it works in a practical manner. I don't see how it would ever go back up.
Okay, Mr. Dodge, I think you asked four questions there.
Yeah, there's tons of them for the
again, that's fine. That's fine. So, Dr. DeRoba, you want to pick away at the four questions?
I'll address, I think, the last one. How will the iSmooth ever provide sort of positive catch advice? And the simplest answer is the index trend turns around and the population increases, which would produce a multiplier greater than one. And so you'd apply, you multiply recent catches by 1.5, you'd get a 50% increase in the catch advice. So it doesn't just ratchet down and down and down. If the index trend turns around, so will the catch advice. On the question about why are we using the bottom trawl survey, which is a lousy gear from monkfish, that's a valid concern, but the bottom trawl survey is synoptic. It covers the entire stock areas. It is a long time series, so it is a valuable bit of information, and you don't have to use the best gear to provide a valuable index. It may not be the best index, or the best gear, but as long as the gear is consistent in its ability to catch a species through time, it might provide a noisy index, but it still contains useful information. And sometimes in these processes, we're forced to use less than ideal data sources. And that's, I agree, that's where we are here.
Mr. Dodge, you want to repeat your first two questions? Would be great if you can remember them.
Sure.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I rattled off a bunch. On the catch reporting, did we ever take into consideration the decline in effort by the fleet, i.e. my father selling two boats, guys getting scallop permits and switching fisheries, and the impacts not only industry-wise but also environmentally, like, you know, how Cox's is suddenly a barren wasteland.
Doctor?
Effort changes were not considered in the management track, but those sorts of things are a bit above and beyond what is really the narrow focus of a typical stock assessment. So I defer to others as to at what point in the fishery management process those sorts of things should inform discussions and decision-making.
To Dodge? I mean, we're going to talk about monkfish another time again today, and we're going to talk about it tomorrow as well. So,
I got you.
Okay, thank you. Next, I have Emerson Hasbrook and then Jason Didden. Hang on, Emerson. No, he's not. I didn't. Okay, Emerson.
There we go.
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Thank you. And thank you, Dr. DeRogo, for your presentation. My name is Emerson Hasbrook, and I'm with the Cornell Marine Program, Long Island, New York. So can we put up the slide for tour six, please? Yeah, that slide. Thank you. And for the third bullet there, I'd just like to provide some updated information. I've conducted two monkfish RSA projects recently, and those projects use a genetic approach to determine if monkfish constitute single or multiple stocks over their coastwide distribution from Newfoundland to North Carolina, and to determine if there is migrational mixing between management areas. And the results of those projects were that American monkfish constitute a single genetic stock across their entire coastwide distribution. And the final report for those projects was approved by NIMS about a year and a half ago. So we may not necessarily need to continue looking at these management here under two separate areas. So I just like to bring that information forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Mr. Orlando?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe Orlando, a Gloucester fisherman for 44 years, plus I'm president of Sector 2. I can tell you in 2020, when COVID hit, everything went to shit. Everybody knows that, okay? Most of the boats just targeted haddock. They didn't even want the monkfish to be shipped overseas. Planes weren't flying anymore. Shoreside facility went to shit, excuse my language. And not only that, but in my sector, all the big boats they used to fish in the mud, they all transitioned into catching pollock and redfish. We told them, a lot of those guys didn't have any hay quota, so we told them to get out of the mud and go fish for something else. So that probably reflects on your landings. But now I want to talk about my experience. So I have never seen so many monkfish in the last 2 years in my whole fishing career. A couple years ago, I targeted just haddock. This year, I've targeted a lot of flatfish, and I fished in the mud. I had no problem catching my 600-pound trip limit on tails. And I could practically say that it was a 50-50 part large tails and small tails. A few times I had to use a monkfish day. Now I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm home by 4 o'clock, I make 2 5-6-hour tows. And I got no problem catching my monkfish tails. What I'm just afraid that, and again, I'm speaking for the northern area, okay? Whatever comes out of this monkfish thing, right? I don't want to see something happen where we're just going to discard fish. I seen that happen in the cutfish fishery years ago. I don't want to see it come back again on monkfish. There's nothing wrong with the monkfish fishery in the northern area. It's a very, very healthy resource. I mean, I'm really blown away. I really came here for monkfish. I didn't come here for groundfish. That's how concerned I am about monkfish. I'm going to try to stay even tomorrow, you know, maybe change some minds here because, again, I'm only talking about the northern area. There is nothing wrong with the northern area monk fishery. If anything, it's coming up and up. I mean, I have a D permit. I had to use a couple of days on unlimited. And now we're talking 30% cut. That 30% cut, if I don't change my fishing behavior, it's all going to be discarded fish. So please, keep in mind in the northern area that there's nothing wrong with the monkfish. Take a look at our landings. I mean, 2020, I didn't catch a pound of monkfish because I was targeting haddock. This year, I didn't target haddock. I stayed in the mud. I targeted gray sole, dabs, flounders, and a few hake. And we call it monkfish. And that ain't going to change. It's not going to go away. So whatever you do, please keep in mind that we're not going to change our behavior. I mean, we're still going to go fishing and keep doing the same thing we're doing. I hate to say it. And what are we going to do with these fish when we go, if you drop the trip limit or you do away with the monkfish? I don't know what's going to happen. But whatever you decide to do, please keep in mind that we don't create a discard fish. It's not a fishery. I understand that. We don't create something that it's going to bite us in the ass. Thank you.
Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dr. Doroba, for the presentation. And I'm kind of going through here, and I didn't see it, so I'm assuming that there was no consideration of splitting the survey time series between the Albatross and the Bigelow survey. Instead, you just use whatever conversion factors were developed between the two vessels. Would that be correct?
That's correct, but it's relatively moot because we have enough years since the Bigelow has been online that whatever we did with conversion between vessels or whether we did that or not actually wouldn't affect the multiplier at all because it's weighted towards more recent years.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else in the audience? Yes, sir, in the back. And please, we're running a little long here. Please ask your question right up front. That would be great. And then Mr. Platts. And then I saw another hand in the back there somewhere. Ms. Brady. Hang on, Jerry. Hit the little mic. Just ask your Mr. Lean, if you could ask your question, that would be great.
Oh, my question is, I mean, we talk about the monks in the northern area. Well, the breakdown is I was just in the northern area, and the hake is the issue. We've cut the hake back so bad aboard the boats that the fishing efforts from the entire fleet have been diverted. I have talked to well over 15 captains from Portland to Gloucester to Boston to New Bedford. Hank Soule and all of us were in Gloucester about 2.5 weeks ago. Hands down, everybody in that room, everybody's efforts have been diverted. They created a choke species where there shouldn't have been one. This week alone, I did the same exact trip I did 1 year ago. My hake numbers doubled. Same toes, same stat area, you know, your research vessel did 308 tows at 20 minutes. Well, average tow speed is 3 knots. Hey, you got that piece of paper I gave you?
Mr. Lehman, if you could ask...
This is getting to my question. It's all relative, trust me. Your 308 tows, pretty much 40 of those were in the Gulf of Maine. That breaks down to 800 minutes of tow bottom. That's 13.333 remaining hours. At 3 knots, that only comes out to 40 nautical miles. There's 36,000 square miles in the Gulf of Maine. Picking me up? I made 4 tows up on the northern edge, up around 3 dories. I had well over 2,000 pounds of cut tails. I left those tails because the hake was an issue. But since hake was an issue, I decided to make a point. So I went back to the same tows I made the previous year in the same area, in the same stat area. I identified the tows identical. My numbers were double. So these statistical modes, the question, the real answer is you're not asking any of the fishermen anything. I've been fishing 21 years. Nobody from NOAA, nobody from NIMS has ever asked me anything, whether or not, unless I was a pirate. Okay? This is a little ridiculous. People's efforts have been diverted. Price of fuel has gone to $5 now. You know, there's literally probably 15 boats in the Gulf of Maine and the Georges area. And trust me, not all of us are fishing at the same time. The efforts have been diverted. We pay $1.50 for hake quota. Do you know the market's only $1.40, and that's gutted weight? So it really cost me $2 to the pound of the hake. Now, a $5 fuel, and I start putting 2,000 pounds aboard, the numbers don't add up, folks. People do not go to sea for free. They're risking their lives every time they throw the lines. And I'm not about to go out there with a group of guys and tell them, I'm sorry for killing you, but I'm not going to pay you, too. Efforts have been moved. And the only reason that nobody knows about this is because nobody ever talks to the fishermen. And I'm sorry that we don't always go to the meetings, but, you know, to run a boat, you know, I spend damn near 200 days a year at sea for the last 21. I've got documented over 14.6 years at sea in 21 years. There's a reason I don't come to these meetings. But unfortunately, the way the cuts are and the way these quota assessments are and the mismanagement and these stock assessments, the research vessel tows, you bought a $54 million boat, dredged a harbor for $2 million, and I made more tow time on the bottom in my last 10-day trip than the 66 days of your entire fall survey. And that entire fall survey only did 10% of 82% of what it was supposed to do. I don't know about you guys, but doing the simple math here, someone's not either doing their job or they're purposely not doing their job.
Okay, Mr. Lehman, do you have a question?
Yeah, well, the question is... Well, the question is the stock surveys, you guys don't go back to the same place every year, so how are you figuring out the model to make up? If you don't go back to the same piece of bottom every year, make the same tow every year, how are you supposed to assess the biomass being greater or smaller in that area? Because every year your assessments are different locations, and I don't know about you, but if fish always went into separate locations, then I pretty much have the easiest job in the world. Do you see where the question is?
Dr. DeRoba, do you see the question? Hang on, John. Dr. Hare.
Yeah, thank you very much for your observations and your experiences. Greatly appreciated. Stock assessments use multiple types of data, one of which is the Fishery Independent Survey, which you talked about on the Bigelow. And it also uses catch information that you reported. And so I think what I'm hearing is a concern about, well, two concerns, concern about the Bigelow, which I hear frequently, and then also concern that as market conditions have changed and as other sort of catch restriction and other species have changed, the fishery for monkfish, the directed fishery for monkfish may have also changed. And how is that change incorporated into the assessments and the management.
That brings me back to my original question. Your model does not show that the efforts have moved in the fleet. The entire fleet, hands down, every captain you want to talk to, I can get about 20 of them on the line right now. I'll call the satellite phones. Every